Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. In this hour of today's show, we're talking about the future of music, the very near future, and the future that could be nearer than we think. Founded in Europe 15 years ago, Spotify launched in the United States 10 years ago this month, ushering in a new era of streaming that has changed the way we listen to and collect music. At the time, the music industry was looking for a fix. In the decade after MP3s and had supplanted CDs, people were using sites like LimeWire to share music for free, even if it was illegal and it was taking a toll. In 1999, recorded music revenues were valued around $15 billion. By the 2010s, they were close to half of that. Then streaming services offered a money-making system that also presented a new way to listen without having to buy individual songs or albums. Instead, users had access to an enormous catalog of music, creating playlists out of virtually unlimited numbers of songs. But the era of streaming, which now also includes heavyweights like Tidal and Apple Music, has also meant that listeners' libraries are more dependent than ever on the lifespan of the platform they use. And unlike a CD player, when that platform gets replaced or becomes obsolete, the music collections could disappear too. Atlantic staff writer Joe Pinsker recently wrote the article, What Will Happen to My Music Library When Spotify Dies? He joins me now to talk a little bit about this potential future of music. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
So Brewster Kahle is the founder of the Internet Archive, which collects digital material and websites that could otherwise be lost in time. The Wayback Machine is part of that project. And you talked to him and you shared the concern about the impermanence of music libraries in the streaming area. And he told you, this is his quote, you're screwed. Why exactly are we not in a good place?
Yeah, he and the other people I talked to for this article were pretty pessimistic. The problem that I presented to them, that I went to them with, is sort of that I have this music in my Spotify library, a collection of playlists that I've made, and I'm just wondering, you know, in 10 or 20 or 30 years, will I actually be able to listen to it? The reason that he and the other people I talked to were pretty pessimistic about that is that being able to access this music is dependent on a bunch of different things. Spotify needs to sort of continue maintaining its software. It needs to keep up all the contracts with rights holders that it has. And then maybe the core and most obvious one is that Spotify needs to still exist. It needs to not go out of business. And if we look at the past several decades of what's happened in the music industry and how people listen to music, we can see that everything constantly changes. So it sort of seems like this is something that will inevitably happen. And the question is, as we keep living through those changes, are we just going to have to keep kind of folding over our libraries and carrying them over in sort of ungainly ways?
You point out that in the past, whether the music was on a record or tape or a CD or an MP3, it was something you bought and you owned it. But as you write, now instead of buying music, people rent it. So let's talk about why that difference is significant.
Sure. I mean, I think it's significant on a lot of different levels. One of them is that when people bought music, it usually meant that they had to actually kind of sacrifice something or put something on the line. They had to spend their own money. Or when it came to downloading MP3s, you had to use up storage space. There were sort of finite resources that were being expended in order to get music. And often that meant that people, in some way, maybe symbolically, felt a bit more ownership over the stuff that they were collecting and listening to. They might be more committed to trying it out. Say there's an album that you listen to the first time. It's kind of weird, but, you know, you just spent $20 on it, so why not keep trying it? And maybe that turns out to be a record that you really, really like. I think something that has really changed is that people don't feel quite as much ownership of it. I mean, in some literal sense, we're renting it. And so if you look at something like streaming, as I reflect on my own listening habits, it just seems like songs come and go more quickly than they used to. There's kind of always something new, and once a song gets in buried in a playlist and I haven't touched it in a couple months, it just kind of sits there. I feel like my music collection doesn't feel as much mine as it used to be.
You use the word rent rather than subscribe. Was that deliberate? Was there a distinction? Is there a distinction for you?
I didn't really have a distinction in mind. I think, we talk about subscriptions, and I think that's a useful way actually of thinking about that, and renting are both useful ways of thinking about how people interact with a whole wide range of digital media these days. Another sort of interesting issue pops up with what happens to the movies that we love that are only available on streaming platforms. Are we going to be able to watch them in 10 or 20 years? Is Netflix around then? Who knows? So there's this whole paradigm shift towards renting. You can call it subscriptions, you can call it renting, whatever it is. We don't have our things anymore as we used to.
My guest is Joe Pinsker, Atlantic staff writer. We're talking about his piece, What Will Happen to My Music Library When Spotify Dies? So let's take a bigger picture look at this. How has the dominance of Spotify changed what we actually listen to, and how has it changed what our music libraries are made of?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think an interesting effect that you can see with Spotify, and researchers have documented this, is that people end up listening to more music, and people end up listening to more varied music. So the actual amount of time they're spending listening after 6 months of trying out a service like Spotify, the actual amount of music they listen, the time they spend listening to music goes up, as well as the number of different artists they listen to. So there's something to say about streaming and its ability to expose us to more things, increase our music discovery. But another interesting thing is that it also means that we spend kind of less time on the original stuff that we would have had. And I think a really interesting parallel trend here is just that Spotify considers itself an audio company, and something that I've realized in my past couple of years of using it is that they aren't always even necessarily interested in getting me to listen to more music. They just want me to listen to something. And what I mean by something here is they have a lot of podcasts that they promote to me, and they also have a new app that's sort of like the app Clubhouse, where people can have live conversations with each other. So there are all sorts of different forms of sound that Spotify wants you to engage with as part of its product, but they aren't music. And so there's an important shift here, I think, in terms of how my music library used to be and how it is now, where nowadays it's suggesting that I listen to all sorts of things, including things that aren't music.
That's interesting. You suggested Spotify sort of tiptoeing into social media, because obviously TikTok has created this entire ecosystem focused on sort of sound bites of songs rather than full songs. I'm curious, what do you think about that combination of social media, the way it uses music, the impact that it's had on the way we consume music?
Yeah, I think it definitely exemplifies how something has changed about the way that we find music we like, and then also the way that we tell other people about it. I mean, my sense is that social media has been great for music discovery. For instance, if you like tweet about an artist you like and someone else responds with another suggestion, that might take you in a cool direction. So I would guess overall it's probably a force for expanding what people listen to. And another observation I'd make is that music is a way that a lot of people express their identity. And something that's changed is that you're no longer buying an album often for $20 or something. And maybe back in the day, you also would have, you know, displayed your favorite CDs in your house so people could see them. So I think it's interesting to look now where that fandom energy gets channeled, where people go to express their musical identities. I think the fan communities on social media are one key place where you can just see that energy overflowing. And one industry analyst I talked to talked about something else, which is that when streaming makes it easy for anyone to listen to anything, the way that some people end up showing their commitment to a certain artist is through buying merchandise and collectibles. And people, I think, want to be able to hold something physical that represents some aspect of their identity. And I don't think social media can fully deliver on that.
My guest is Joe Pinsker. The name of his piece in The Atlantic is What Will Happen to My Music Library When Spotify Dies. All right, so let me play devil's advocate. Why is it important to have your music library in the future? Why is longevity even important?
Sure. I mean, I think this is maybe something that I might obsess over a little more than other people, but I would guess that there is some value to a lot of people for accessing and reminiscing about the music that was from earlier phases in our life. For me, I find it's such a powerful cue to different times and places and people that I've known. And, you know, when I stumble across a song that I was playing on repeat in the spring of 2007, it just takes me right back to that place. And it brings back this flood of memory. So I think there's an important aspect of music and memory that we need to bear in mind as we think about how much of this we carry into the future.
As I mentioned in the introduction, streaming services, now this depends upon who you ask this question, it appears like it's a lifeboat to the music industry. Last year, record music revenues were back up to $12 billion, though the amount that money artists themselves are getting has not really risen the same way. So how could the profitability of streaming, both for labels and we hope for artists, be important to thinking about the future of music libraries?
Yeah, this is sort of a question that fascinates me as a listener. I've lived through so many different format changes at this point, tapes and CDs and MP3s and now streaming. And streaming is so convenient from a listener's perspective, but I think it's also really useful to think about what its shortcomings are, and then think about how those might inform what the next iteration of music listening looks like. So a couple dimensions that I can think of just off the top of my head are maybe there's something that would give listeners more a sense of ownership or permanence. The pendulum might swing back towards not necessarily physical media, but something that simulates the ownership and permanence of physical media. Another thing you might think about is something that benefits artists more, that makes it more sustainable for people to record music and not have to rely so much on concert revenues or merchandise revenues. But I can't stress enough how speculative all this stuff is, because this one researcher I was talking with was saying that in the 80s, when researchers were looking at how people might be able to listen to digital music at home, none of them conceived of the possibility that the internet might be the way that we get that we get digital music delivered to us. So there are probably going to be parts of the future of music listening that either don't exist yet or are here, but we don't even think of as connected to it. I think there are so many different possibilities, and it's hard to wrap our mind around what might actually become.
You write in the piece that for every decade you've been alive, it's been defined by a different medium for listening to music, whether that be tapes or CDs or MP3s. And then so streaming comes around in 2010s, which, hey, we're a decade old now. You know, I'm curious, how did the industry experts you spoke to talk about what could come next? In the next decade, you'll be alive, hopefully, knock wood.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think there's one prediction they made their predictions had to do on one level with being extremely uncertain, and then they're on another, very certain. I'll start with the uncertainty. The uncertainty is what exactly the next iteration or paradigm of music listening will be. I don't think, you know, some people might claim that they know where it's headed. I don't think it's really possible to predict with any certainty. But the interesting thing, and the thing that was consistent from all the interviews I did, is just that people are really certain that something is going to change. You know, maybe Spotify is around in 20 years, but it's an entirely different company. It's doing a different thing and has a different business model. It's just as possible that Spotify goes away. But there was this consensus that something is going to change. That's what we've seen in the past several decades. It's what we've seen in the past 120 years of the history of sort of personal on-demand music listening. The format always changes. The way people listen to music always changes. And there's no reason to expect that we sort of reach the end of history with streaming. Something's going to change.
Now you mentioned earlier this is something you've sort of been obsessing on, and in your piece, we might know why. You write about having to rebuild your own music library after a decade ago losing 5,000 audio files from a, quote, hard drive backup gone wrong. Was there anything out of that process of rediscovering or listening to music or recreating playlists
that you really appreciated, even though it came from a small tragedy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it drew my attention to questions like the ones we've been discussing. I feel like if I didn't have that small disaster, I might just sort of be blindly going into the future expecting that all my media will go with me. But I guess one lesson that I took away from it is that it's just really hard to...
One lesson he took away, and then his line goes out? Joe, I'm going to ask you, said one lesson I took away from, and then your line dropped? So,
do you
a cliffhanger?
Am I here now?
You're here now.
Yeah.
So,
sorry about that.
Go for it.
No, one lesson I took away is that it's so hard to swim upstream against the systems that are mainstream for how we listen to music. And as I was recovering these 10-year-old files in different places, it was so hard to go find them in all these sort of outdated bits of software, or trying to access my iPod, which just no longer worked. So it made me really appreciate how the things that we feel like right now, in a way we think of them as kind of, well, this is just, it works well and it'll work well forever. I don't think any of this stuff is going to work. And I think in 5 years, in 10 years, in 20 and 30, just farther out into the future, it's going to be really hard, I think, for me personally and for a lot of other people to keep track of all the stuff that they care about.
My guest has been Joe Pinsker, staff writer for The Atlantic. He wrote a great piece called What Will Happen to My Music Library When Spotify Dies? Hey, Joe, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.